Does it feel like every time you step into a bar or restaurant, you enter a world of endless possibilities as rows of meticulously curated liquor bottles beckon to you to explore the artistry of craft cocktails? Are you overwhelmed with the sheer number of choices, or do you embrace the thrill of discovery as you sip on beautifully crafted cocktails inspired by the latest trends and innovations in mixology? It seems like we need to say goodbye to our routine drink and hello to a world of vibrant colors, tantalizing aromas, and exquisite flavors. Are you ready to ignite your passion for craft cocktails and awaken your taste buds to a new realm of flavor? Get ready, as we are going to break it down for you so you won't feel overwhelmed parting with your next $20 to try the newest, trendiest cocktail out there. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Sort of Sophisticated, a podcast rooted in becoming more cultured and curious, where we endeavor to suspend judgment, expand our worldview, and learn to appreciate varying perspectives and values.
But really, it's a show where we hope to enlighten anyone who cares on topics that might make them more interesting and well-versed humans, and just dangerous enough to hold their own in this sophisticated world. Sort of.
I'm your host, Amanda, here with my excitable, brainy, hysterical, and just neurotic co-host, Pete. And our goal today is to take your familiarity with old craft spirits and provide a foundation of knowledge and appreciation that enriches the experience of exploring today's diverse and innovative craft cocktails. By understanding the roots of mixology and the evolution of cocktail culture, enthusiasts can fully appreciate the creativity, complexity, and heritage behind modern craft cocktails. And our word of the day is apricate. Our challenge is to work this word into this podcast somewhere and make it seem like we meant to.
Amanda, did you mean to say appreciate?
Sure did it.
What?
I did have to look up the definition too.
There's a word, apricate?
Evidently, yes.
Oh,
that what random does it... word generator.
What? Let's go. What does it mean?
It means to bask in the sunshine. So good luck, Pete. This one's all on you.
Ooh, I like a good challenge. This one's going to be tough. All right. Apricate. Not appreciate. Apricate. I got
apricate.
It.
Apricate. Okay. Yep. Okay. So I know you like challenges. Have you seen Drink Masters on Netflix?
Can't say that I have. Drink Masters?
Yes.
It sounds kind of like my show. Is it just a bunch of dudes with master's degrees sitting around drinking?
I think that would be a pretty good show.
Get hammered? Drink Masters.
That's kind of like Drunk History, but...
What is it?
It's a little deceiving, but it's a reality competition show. Kind of like the Great British Baking Show. Ring any bells?
Oh, that's a good one. Except I think you mean the Great British Bake Off. I love that show. Do you know why?
Why?
Because Baker's gonna bake, and the taker's gonna take.
Shut up.
Wait. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Anyways, it's the same sort of concept. So competitors all get a challenge and they execute the challenge with surprise ingredients or different themes, et cetera. But really why it's so interesting is because craft cocktails are kind of the in thing right
now. The in thing right now?
Yeah, they've surged in popularity in recent years. And there's an increasing number of bars and restaurants that are dedicated to this craft cocktail experience.
I have totally noticed that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And have you noticed that they use locally sourced fresh ingredients? House-made syrups, hand-cut ice, fancy garnishes.
Garnishes? Who likes garnishes? I've had my wages garnished once. I'm not a fan, though. Give it to me straight over ice.
I know. You're such a purist. You just like your liquor on the rocks.
Liquor on the rocks, baby.
I would then challenge you to maybe spice up your life a little and try a craft concoction the next time we go out.
All right. Well, then you better prepare me, Amanda, because I'm going to need a little history lesson on what the rage is all about in the first place. And probably a few vocab words that are good to know just so I can be dangerous enough at the bar the next time we go out. Lay it on me, sister.
All right. I guess one, do you know what ABV is?
Absolute value. Yeah.
Touche.
Nerdy math major.
I love it. But when we talk about alcohol, it means alcohol by volume.
Ah.
And so it's the content within the alcohol. And it's expressed as a percentage of the total volume. Thus, it indicates the proportion of what pure alcohol is present in the drink relative to the total volume of liquid. So, an example, a White Claw has about 5.5% ABV. So, only 5.5% of the drink is alcohol. The rest is filler.
Lightweight.
Fair enough. I like myself a White Claw. But Pete, proof is probably a better term for you, and one that you're more probably familiar with because you like to drink your drinks on the rocks.
I like my liquor on the rocks, and I need it watered down because I'm not that cool. And what the hell does proof mean?
I'm surprised you don't know, because proof is the beverages.
I sort of know. I'm sort of setting you up here so you can tell our listeners what proof is all about. Go for it. Amanda, what's proof?
Proof is the beverage's alcohol or spirit content. So it's mainly often used in the U.S. It's calculated twice the ABV percentage. So example, if a drink is 40% ABV, it would be considered 80 proof. And when I say drink, I really mean liquor, because we're talking about straight up spirits here. And so the higher the proof of the spirit, the higher the alcohol content.
That is some 80 proof, some serious stuff.
Yeah. But well, you know what? Some like really cool stuff.
Give it to me.
Proof actually stems from a historical method that they used to determine the alcohol content of spirits. Now, back then, we didn't have all of our fancy technology. So back in like the 16th and 17th centuries, British sailors were given rations of rum as part of their daily provisions to ensure that the rum was that they, sorry, in order to ensure that the rum that they received hadn't been watered down, they devised a simple test. They would mix the rum with gunpowder and ignite it.
If
the mixture burned steadily with a blue flame, it was considered proof that the alcohol content was high enough and it hadn't been watered down. And thus,
that is amazing.
Established the concept, right? Of proof.
Oh, my Lord. That is so cool. I didn't know that.
I mean, now it's become more standardized and, you know, there's...
And America uses proof, but everybody else in the world probably uses something else, just sort of like every system of measurement America has that's so dumb.
Sure.
I bet. Right? Totally. All right. So is that the whole history lesson or do we got more here?
Well, I guess that was some of it. But to give you a little more, did you know that alcohol dates all the way back to ancient civilizations? And I feel like you're going to geek out a little bit because you love history so much.
I do.
But no, there's evidence that suggests that beer was brewed in Mesopotamia. So as early as 4000 BCE.
Mesopo-what? What the hell is Mesopo-what today? Where is that?
It's actually modern day Iraq.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Who would have known?
So one would have to assume this would make it the oldest drink in human history. I mean, wine was also founded around that same time in like Egypt and China and also Mesopotamia. But basically, as a human race, we've been drinking for a hot second.
It's pretty cool. But I mean, like, who's making all this booze? Like, did they have brewers back then? Was it a thing? Like, that would be so awesome if somebody already had that job.
They did. I mean, I guess anybody who brewed anything is technically was a brewer. But throughout the Middle Ages, so we're talking medieval times here, beer and wine making were often associated with monasteries. So monks played a significant role in refining the brewing process and technique. And they were the ones who spread the knowledge of alcohol production and creation.
Wait, what? Seriously, monks? That is awesome. Go figure. Everything all of a sudden makes a lot more sense on why we had so many religious folk back then. And now we barely have any. Interesting. All right, keep going.
All right, this knowledge evolved during the colonial expansion, and in the 16th and 17th centuries, distilled spirits such as rum and whiskey started to gain prominence, especially since the distillation process produces higher alcohol content.
Captain Jack Sparrow, baby. Why is the rum gone? Why is the rum gone?
Because you drank it.
No, Pirates of the Caribbean. Why is the rum gone? Oh my God, go watch Pirates of the Caribbean. Shout out to Captain Jack.
So post Captain Jack Sparrow, the Industrial Revolution in the 18th and 19th centuries started to transform the alcohol production. The advances in technology.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
It's when it gets good, right? Because the advances in technology led to mass production methods, making alcoholic beverages more accessible to the broader population. And this period also saw the rise of modern breweries and distilleries. But then in the early 20th century.
All right, 20th century, where are we? Are we like, that's like 1900s now. We're like in almost modern day times, right?
Correct.
All right, go.
So in the 20th century, modern day time, various countries, including the U.S., implemented like prohibition laws, which is the banning of the production or the sale and the distribution of alcoholic beverages.
Boo!
Or just spirits, period. However, prohibition led to the rise of the illegal alcohol trade and the formation of organized crime syndicates.
So you're telling me life finds a way. I love it. If I lived back then, this would totally have been my job, like finding illegal ways to make alcohol. This is awesome.
So you would have started a crime syndicate?
I absolutely would have. Absolutely. Yep.
I could see you. Mm-hmm. Kind of godfather status.
Totally.
All right. So fast forward then to the post-prohibition era.
Post-pro-PP.
Yes. When prohibition was repealed in the United States in 1933.
Yes. Best year ever. Thank you, 21st Amendment. And Mr. Roosevelt.
I love that you know all of that. But it led to the resurgence of the alcohol industry. And since then, the production, distribution, consumption of alcohol have all continued to evolve, and thus creating new trends and obviously new regulations and cultural attitudes that are shaping the industry. And that is where we are now seeing the innovation of craft cocktails by mixologists. So they're no longer just your bartender. They're now mixologists.
Really? A mixologist? People come up with anything to look cool, Amanda. By the way, I think you should know, I just decided my new job right now is a sexologist, and I'm currently available and looking for work. Oh. Thank you very much.
All right.
Is that a real thing? Should that be a real thing? Mixologist? Whatever. Go ahead. Continue.
So if you're going to order a fancy fufu craft cocktail, you kind of got to know what spirit you like or what your body can tolerate. Because interestingly enough, I'm allergic to alcohol.
Really?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
I don't produce that enzyme to break down the alcohol. So it's probably not great for me to drink, but I still do it.
A little too much in.
No, it's not.
Interesting. I didn't know that about
you. It's because people react differently to different types of alcohol.
But I mean, I've seen you drink. You like yourself a fancy cocktail.
I do.
Yeah.
But I only drink certain spirits.
What do you drink?
Generally, I'll drink tequila. Because gin will kill me.
Really? I'm drinking gin right now.
I know.
Gin is my friend.
The juniper?
Nope. Oh, interesting.
Allergic reaction to the max. Huh. But what do you like?
I like it all, baby. But I appreciate a good bottle of Henry IV Heritage Cognac Grand Champagne at $4.5 million a bottle.
That's a lot. It's a lot for a bottle.
It is. But you know me. All right. So seriously, Amanda, give me the top five spirits out there for our listeners, like the most widely consumed or I guess the most recognized worldwide.
That's an easy one. So we got vodka, which is known for being super versatile because it's flavor.
Vodka. Profile. Shout out to The Breakfast Club. Emilio Estevez, Ali Sheedy. No?
No.
What do you drink? Vodka. When do you drink vodka? Whenever. Nothing? Let's go. All right, go ahead. Vodka.
Got to add it to my list.
Yeah. Give me a little bit about vodka.
So it's super versatile because its flavor profile is pretty neutral. So it makes it a staple in many cocktails and mixed drinks. It's made from primarily grain or potatoes, and it's typically distilled to a high level of purity, which is how you get that clean and smooth flavor profile.
Huh, go figure. That's why like rice and potatoes are considered staple foods. Vodka's like a staple drink because it's made from grains and potatoes.
Yeah.
That
it's a starch. Think of it. It's like
that is
you
weird.
Have rice and you pair it with something.
I never put that together.
Yeah.
All right, give me number two.
Whiskey. So though it's a pretty broad category and it includes various styles. So Scotch whiskey, Irish whiskey, bourbon, rye whiskey. And it's all typically made with fermented grain mash and aged in wooden barrels. Thus, you get those complex flavors.
I love me some whiskey.
I know you do. It's kind of your go-to. But I think you actually like rum, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, love the rum.
All right. But number three, rum. It's made with some sugarcane, molasses, and it's associated with tropical regions like the Caribbean and Latin America. And it can come in light, dark, spice, and aged. And each of those different profiles have its own distinct flavor characteristics.
I love me some rum, man. Give me the rum, man.
You just love all alcohol.
I love me my rum, man. Give me some rum, man. John Candy?
I'm feeling like another
don't remember?
Reference, no.
That would be Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Thank you very much. Shout out to John Candy, Steve Martin sitting in the hotel room. Oh, I love the rum, man.
All right, so we're just going to go to number four.
Number four.
Yeah.
Give me four.
Okay. Gin.
What I'm drinking right now.
You are. Primarily with juniper berries. Did you know that?
I did not.
And also some botanicals.
No wonder I like it so much. I'm not a big gin guy. But this makes sense. It's got berries, it's got botanicals. What else has it got?
It's got some herbs and spices and citrus peels. So a like trifecta of earthiness.
Yes.
So gin has seen a resurgence in recent years, which is why you just are chugging your gin right now.
That's right.
Because craft distilleries are producing a wide range of innovative and artisanal varieties. Fun fact.
All right. Finish it off with number five.
Of course it's going to be tequila.
Tequila. Tan, ta, ta. Okay, sorry.
It's made from the blue agave plant, and it comes in various styles. Blanco, unaged. Reposado, aged. And añejo, which is extra aged. Each offering distinct flavor profiles ranging from earthy and vegetal to rich and caramelized.
Reposado. Reposado. The best ever. Let's go. I love the reposado.
I mean, I love any tequila.
All right. Really. All right. So now we got the spirits. So time to take me through some of the basic mixers. I know I'm just a rocks guy, But I know most people listening would be way more interested in adding a splash, a something, something, than just my rocks. So go from like simplest to most complex for me so my brain can keep up, and don't do anything too crazy. Just do like a couple.
All right. So mixes are pretty straightforward.
Go. Good.
First, we have some tonic water. It's going to be...
Tonic water?
Tonic water. Just okay. Carbonated
That's
water.
That's a mixer?
Flavored with quinine.
Whoa. Okay. I don't even know what that is. All
it gives it a little slightly bitter taste.
Okay.
And is famously paired with
gin. I got a friend who loves this. That she pairs everything with this. Like absolutely. I couldn't understand tonic water, but this makes sense to me now. I'm getting it. Okay.
It's not my favorite thing.
What is it mostly famously paired with, though? I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Gin and tonic.
Yes. You've heard of that's that? What she does. Mm-hmm. Yep. All right.
But I don't like tonic water. I'm more of a soda water. So that's going to be our second one.
Okay.
And it's sparkly water or club soda. The versatile mixer basically has some very subtle mineral flavor. So when you say mineral water, think of that, but bubbly. Huh. And it doesn't alter the base spirit's taste. So vodka soda,
yep.
Whiskey highball, Tom Collins.
Oh, okay. Yeah, water. No. Since I go straight, I don't know any of this stuff. This is amazing. Go, go. What else? You got a few more?
I'm going to go with fresh squeezed lemon or lime juice. I mean, I like
that's
myself.
That's it? Something that simple?
Yeah, that's all of our margaritas
that's,
are made.
That's like that's considered a mix. This is wild. I didn't know these are the ideas were called, like these things were called mixers. Okay, go for it. Sorry.
So the lemon and the lime gives you a little bit of tartness and acidity to kind of balance out the sweetness and other ingredients in your cocktail. It's a key component in the classics such as margaritas, daiquiris, and whiskey sours. Oh. So you can have your rum, your tequila, and your whiskey.
Now I am starting to feel sort of sophisticated. Yes,
you're
look at
coming
this.
Along. You're coming along.
Wow, young Jedi teaching Obi-Wan Kenobi. Let's go. Continue.
All right. Then you have ginger beer. So it's a non-alcoholic carbonated soda with a spicy and slightly sweet flavor, and it's derived from the ginger root. So it complements the heat of the spirits. Generally, you're going to find this in like a Moscow Mule, a Dark and Stormy, and the Kentucky Mule.
Ooh, the Dark and Stormy. So scary and mysterious. What the hell's a Dark and Stormy? And by the way, why isn't the signature cocktail the Kentucky Derby, the Kentucky Mule? Sounds like it should be.
I mean, it totally should be. But...
What? The mint julep? Really? This doesn't make a lot of sense. I would argue we should petition to have it changed to the Kentucky Mule. Let's do it.
You should just start your change.org petition.
Let's go. Right now. We're doing that. I think that's a good sort of platform to stand. All right. Sorry. I've drank too much gin. Okay. All right. So is that it? Or is there anything else or what?
I mean, we're going to throw in a little cranberry juice because it's a very basic mixer that every bar has. So it's known for being tart and fruity in flavor. It adds a vibrant color and kind of tanginess to a cocktail. And it's a key ingredient in a cosmopolitan. So now you know just enough to dab a little from just straight spirits, and you can add a little mixer, a little something, something. And then you're ready to go the next step, which would be to try one of the five most iconic drinks.
It'll be a party in your mouth, people. Let's go. What are the five most iconic drinks?
All right, buckle up. Ready?
I'm ready.
Here we go. First, we have the martini. So it's made with vodka or gin and dry vermouth. And it's typically garnished with an olive or a lemon twist.
I love it when my drinks are garnished.
I know you also eat the garnishes, which is kind of weird.
And I'm a movie guy, so I know I'm saying garnish wrong, but garnished is from Fletch. And it's really funny when he gets his wages garnished. It's quite.
You did say that earlier.
Shout out to Chevy Chase, right? Okay. Nobody wants their wages garnished.
All right. Well,
what's so cool about the martini?
I mean, it's known for its elegance and simplicity.
It really is, right? Wasn't that the 007?
Yeah.
Yes.
The symbol of sophistication.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, the symbol of our podcast. The martini from now on. That's it. I love it. All right. What else?
The old fashioned. It's a classic whiskey cocktail. It dates back to the early 19th century, and it's made by muddling sugar with bitters.
Excuse me? Muddling?
Muddling.
What is muddling, please?
It's when you have a little stick. And in the bottom of your glass, you put your ingredients, and then you take the stick and you just pound it.
Perfect. Whoa. Okay. I've just changed our word of the day to muddling, everybody. And here we go. Okay. So we have the old fashioned, and I love the idea of muddling and pounding things. What's next?
So you add a little bit of whiskey into that, and then you garnish it with a citrus peel and a cherry.
There's that garnishing. All right.
All right. And then we're going to go the margarita. Again, my favorite cocktail. It's a refreshing, tangy cocktail made with some tequila, triple sec, a little lime juice, and served with a salt rim. It's one of the most popular cocktails worldwide, mostly because it's known for the perfect balance of the sweet, sour, and salty flavors.
Oh, it is. Give me one margarita. I'm going to open my leg. Give me. No?
Oh, my God.
Okay.
No.
All right, fine. And just keep moving on.
All right, we're just going to bypass all that.
Okay.
The daiquiri. So it's a simple, refreshing cocktail made with white rum, again, lime juice, some simple syrup, and it's served, shaken and strained into a chilled cocktail glass and then garnished with a lime wheel. So it's perfect for your hot days.
Hey, Amanda, when I get home, I'm going to make myself a daiquiri and apricate out in the backyard.
Well played.
I did it.
You did it.
I'm going to bask in that sunshine. I'm going to apricate in the backyard drinking a daiquiri.
You did it. But really, I think you're going to be drinking a whiskey sour.
Oh, is that the last one? That's the fifth most iconic?
Yeah.
Let's go.
So a classic sour cocktail. It combines whiskey, lemon juice, and simple syrup. See a theme here? Garnish with a cherry and an orange slice.
Everything's garnished.
It is. It's just a presentation.
I know. I get it.
So the whiskey sour, it's a drink that's both tart and sweet with a smooth and refreshing flavor profile.
And an egg white.
Not always.
Look that up.
What happens when it's served without an egg white?
I have no idea. I just know enough to know.
Are they not fancy enough?
I just know the OG whiskey sour was an egg white, and that's why I never liked it. But if they're not served with an egg white anymore, then maybe I'll start drinking them. So, gotcha, mama.
Now we need to ask every time we go to a bar if they're whiskey sours.
Right.
Egg white or no egg white.
All right. So it sounds like those are the top five. Miss anything or no?
Well, if you want to make them extra crafty and trendy, got to start adding those fresh, high-quality, off-the-cuff ingredients and give them a little bit of a spin. Because then you're going to bring yourself to being like influencer status.
Influencer status? Whoa. All right. So give me a quick example of that. Like adding some off-the-cuff stuff to prove you're a little sophisticated.
I mean, instead of having a regular martini, a mixologist may add in a little truffle to your martini. Give it a little umami flavor. Or add some smoked maple syrup to an old fashioned, giving the drink some more complexity.
Should you say truffle and Absolutely. Smoked maple syrup?
Yes.
Really? Whatever. Those weren't one of the mixers I remember hearing about like 2 seconds ago.
Right, because those were mixers. This is next level-ish right now.
Fine. Give me something simpler then.
Okay, so something a little simpler. We're going to take your normal gin and tonic, super basic, add a little bit of basil with lemon and simple syrup, and now you got yourself a basil smash. And you know how you like to smash stuff, so I feel like you should try that one.
I love the basil.
You do. Or you can take a martini, and in my case, I love a good old lychee martini. So your basic martini, give it a little splash of St. Germain's and some lychee, and now you're unlocking some more of the floral notes.
Because everybody loves drinking floral notes, I guess? Yeah, I want to drink flowers.
You're going to be surprised.
All right, whatever.
You're elevating your palate.
You're right. I'm trying to be more sophisticated.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the next time then, when you see a charred chili, an orange Aperol spritz, or a Mai Tai punch, or a creme brulee Irish coffee, just remember the roots of the classic drink that's being used to create a new craft cocktail with these new elevated ingredients.
I think I'm sort of keeping up now. I know my spirits. I know my mixers. I know some popular drinks, and I know how to, air quotes, mix them up, so to speak, and have a little fun changing the ingredients. But now I need to know how to actually order the damn drink, Amanda, so I don't look like I don't know what I'm doing or come off as a total asshole to the bartender or something. So help a brother out.
All right. So here's how to go to a bar and order a drink. So listen up so that way you can expand your palate. Ready? So first.
Ready.
Observe your environment. If it's a casual bar, a trendy cocktail lounge, or a formal event, the ambiance is going to give you clues about the type of cocktails that are commonly served and appreciated there. Got it?
Got it.
Number two, consider the crowd. Pay attention to people's drink choices. Are they ordering a classic cocktail? Are they ordering a craft cocktail, beer, maybe wine? If you're with a group, you've got to take cues from what other people are ordering. Or simply, ask a recommendation from the bartender or the server if you're sitting down.
Wait. So you're just saying follow the crowd? That's bullshit. I guess I get it, but like, why would you follow the crowd?
I'm not saying follow the crowd as much as I'm saying the place you are at might be known for something, and that's usually a safe bet as you kind of dip your toe into
that,
this world.
That makes a lot more sense. I got it.
All right. So third, know your audience. Are you in a social setting or are you at a work function? One way, you might opt to be a bit more adventurous with your close friends, and the other, you might pick a more professional or universally appealing cocktail. All right. And fourth, ask questions. You can totally ask the bartender or server for recommendations. It's based on your taste preferences and the mood of the room. But bartenders are often knowledgeable about the menu and can suggest cocktails that suit your palate or the vibe of the establishment.
I would argue you probably should be ready to choose pretty quickly after they make their suggestions, because you want to respect time of servers and bartenders and all everybody.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah, they got a lot of things going on.
They do.
So if they offer you a few suggestions, pick one.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't waste their time.
I get it.
Fifth, consider the time of day and the occasion when choosing your cocktail. For example, a light and refreshing drink might be more appropriate for a daytime gathering, while something stronger or more complex, heavier, might be better suited for an evening drink. And finally, be open to trying something new. While it's important to be mindful of the atmosphere and preferences of those around you, don't be afraid to step outside of your comfort zone and try something. Exploring different cocktails can be a fun way to expand your palate and discover new favorites.
Oh, okay. I got it.
But also, don't forget, if you're at a bar where you're paying for each drink individually, it's common to tip based on the complexity of the order and the level of service provided.
Huh.
So for example, if you order a simple beer, a $1 tip would be standard. Well, if you order a more complicated cocktail that requires a little more extra effort.
With all the garnishes?
Yes. Huh. A larger tip may be appropriate.
Oh, okay.
But ultimately, tipping is a way to show appreciation for good service and hospitality. So feel free to adjust your tip based on your experience and the level of service that was provided.
But we don't want to be like chintzy here. I mean, we want people to make money, right? They're serving, so we want to be kind.
Fair.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. What about if it's a bad drink? Like, if they make a bad drink, do you still tip, or what do you like? Give any sense?
I mean, you still tip, and then you can also say, "Oh, I think the mix is off a little bit." And I'm sure the bartender, they want you to enjoy your drink; they'll remake it for you.
But you still, they did the work, so give them the tip.
Yes,
got it. Beautiful. I love it. Okay, it's that time of the show, Amanda. We've been through quite a few lists today, but let's do one more. Your fave. I'm assuming you have some fun facts ready to go.
I sure do, because it's my favorite part of the show. So I did my homework.
Let's go.
All right. Number one, beer holds a title of the oldest recorded alcoholic beverage in history, with evidence of its production dating back to ancient Mesopotamia around 4000 BC.
4000 BC? That is so old.
It is. And I know we already mentioned it before, but like it's worth
worth
putting in the fun facts.
That's some old beer. Can you imagine drinking a beer that old?
It'd be worth a lot of money.
Probably would.
And spoiled. Besides the fact. Number two, cenocilicophobia. I can't even say it right. This tongue twister of a word refers to the fear of an empty glass.
OMG. I am a total cenocilophobiac.
I know. You like your glass full all the time, or just a little something.
That is awesome.
All right. Number three, alcohol was medicine. In ancient times, it was often prescribed as a remedy for various ailments. And so today, alcohol is still used in some medical contexts, such as disinfecting wounds and as a solvent in certain medications.
Huh.
Yeah. Number four, many countries have a specific alcohol beverage that holds cultural significance and is considered their national drink. Example, vodka is often associated with Russia, tequila with Mexico, whiskey for Scotland.
Wait. And rum, man. Rum with Jamaica, man, right?
Totally. Finally, the term cocktail has a disputed origin, but one theory is that it comes from the practice of serving mixed drinks with a feather or a cock's tail as a garnish.
Huh.
Yeah, you can't eat it, but a cock's tail.
You can't eat a cock's tail?
I wouldn't try.
Lot of people. Okay, I'll leave that alone.
Well, that's all I got for today, so glad you're going to leave that one alone. And if you haven't been convinced that you should try all of the craft cocktails in town and be a little more sophisticated or trendy, then I don't really know what else to tell you to convince you.
Huh. All right. Well, let's try to keep it sort of sophisticated here, Amanda. What do I need to do and remember from this episode to make me a bit more cultured and curious, besides watching an episode or two of Drink Masters on Netflix, of course?
Of course. Well, first, get to know your spirits. It'll be helpful when ordering a new drink or when you're at an open bar work party to know your basics, so you come off as a little more worldly. Second, at your next party, after you've introduced yourself to someone, ask them what they're drinking. Third, tell them that you've been fascinated with the new craft cocktail scene and mixology. Maybe even ask if they've watched Drink Masters on Netflix. Then finally, share these interesting and relevant details to seem sort of sophisticated. One, proof just means 2x ABV, and really started as a way for sailors to prove their rum wasn't watered down. Two, the 5 most iconic go-to drinks are martinis, old fashions, whiskey sours, margaritas, and daiquiris. Usually all a safe bet, and if there's a fancy spin on the specialty menu, give it a whirl. Number 3, don't blunder when ordering a drink. Remember, observe the setting, consider the crowd, know your audience, ask questions, be mindful of the time of day, and be open to trying something new. Number 4, leave a good tip. especially if there is more pizzazz to your drink. Make the bartender your friend, and you will be having a good night. And finally, cheers to becoming just sort of sophisticated.
I love it. Cheers. Let's go. All right. And there you have it, dear listeners. Thank you for joining us on our adventure into the world of craft cocktails and mixology. We'd like to think we've shared just enough information to make you either a flaming nuisance or a little more sophisticated to your fellow humans. So let's raise a glass to the noble pursuit of fancy cocktails. Remember, folks, whether you're sipping a drink that's been aged longer than a fine wine or that's garnished with more greenery than a jungle, the most important ingredient is always laughter. So next time you're crafting a cocktail, don't forget to add a splash of humor and a twist of wit. Until next time, keep your shakers chilled and your spirits high. Cheers to you. And may your cocktails be as fancy as a peacock on a payday. If you enjoyed this episode and found it particularly interesting, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share with your peeps. Until next time, stay curious and stay inspired.